ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 4, text 15. Evam gyatva kritam karma purvair api mumukshubhihi Kuru karma eva tasmat tvang purvai purvataram kritam. All the liberated souls in ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty following in their footsteps. Purport. There are two classes of men. Some of them are full of polluted material things within their hearts, and some of them are materially free. Krishna consciousness is equally beneficial for both of these persons. Those who are full of dirty things can take to the line of Krishna consciousness for a gradual cleansing process, following the regulated principles of devotional service. Those who are already cleansed of the impurities may continue to act in the same Krishna consciousness so that others may follow their exemplary activities and thereby be benefited. Foolish persons or neophytes in Krishna consciousness often want to retire from activities without having knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna's desire to retire from activities on the battlefield was not approved by the Lord. One need only know how to act to retire from the activities of Krishna consciousness, and to sit aloof making a show of Krishna consciousness is less important than actually engaging in the field of activities for the sake of Krishna. Arjuna is here advised to act in Krishna consciousness following in the footsteps of the Lord's previous disciples, such as the sun god Vivaswan, as mentioned herein before. The Supreme Lord knows all his past activities. That means his own past activities, as well as those of persons who acted in Krishna consciousness in the past. Therefore, he recommends the acts of the sun god, who learned this art from the Lord some millions of years before. All such students of Lord Krishna are mentioned here as pure liberated persons engaged in the discharge of duties allotted by Krishna. Arjuna has presented arguments as to why he should not fight. And Krishna is presenting counter-arguments as to why Arjuna should fight. And the point that he's making here, in many cases of such discussions, would in and of itself just completely finish the argument. It's a winning argument. In many cases, when they're in Vedic culture, when there are discussions as to what is to be done, what is not to be done, the point that what has been done by persons previously in the past, especially great personalities, citing that is enough to win your argument, unless someone else cites the activity of someone else previously who did something contrary to that. For instance, just to give one of many, many examples, when Maharaj Drupad was objecting to five Pandavas all wanting to marry his daughter, he said, "I, that's not the law. Dharma means law, as one of the main meanings of the word dharma. It's not dharma means it's not ethically correct. It's also not in law. I never heard of such a thing." But then Yudhishthira said, one of Yudhishthira's counter arguments was, well, I'm so much attuned with dharma that I can't even think of doing anything wrong. So if it seems right to me, it should be right. Not everyone can use that argument. Only Yudhishthira and a few others can use such an argument. But then Yudhishthira also gave the he gave an example of someone in the past. This has happened in the past. So it's not the general law is one woman, one husband. But there can be exceptions, in exceptional cases. So to cite that, well, so-and-so did this, that's enough. Unless one can find a counterquote, but that would clinch it. This is called aitihya, or tradition. It's one of the it's one of the kinds of praman or evidence given or accepted within Vedic culture. There are different kinds of evidence for us, both for establishing philosophical points and for establishing proper behavior. So various philosophers in the Vedic tradition, they accept various kinds of praman. There are 10 standard kinds of praman, which Jiva Goswami, who is our acharya of tattva, of philosophical understanding within the Gaudiya tradition, he accepts 3 categories of praman: the shabda, Vedic sound, as being overarching, and then pratyaksha, or direct experience, and anuman, anuman is taken to mean what is understood, what is extrapolated from pratyaksha. So there are other kinds of, just like logic, that's included with anuman, and aitihya, or tradition, is included within shabda, because it's presumed that even if you don't find any evidence directly in the Vedic corpus, if it's accepted by great personalities, it's as good as shabda. Although in another sense, it's not exactly as good, because if you find some Vedic injunction which overrules aitihya, traditional usages, then that would overrule it. Or in some cases, the usage would overrule the rule, or what great personalities have done. For instance, within our ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada told us to chant 16 rounds a day, although the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to chant 1 lakh, which is generally taken as 64 rounds. So that doesn't mean that chanting 64 rounds is nullified, but it's acceptable within ISKCON, because Srila Prabhupada said so. So that's the words of a great personality. So this point, following tradition, is very much part of the what we could call the Indian psyche. Although Krishna consciousness is a transcendental science, it has been executed traditionally on this planet, in this tract of land, which is from Ganga Sagar in the east to the Sindhu River in the west, which is now in Pakistan, and from the Himalayas in the north to Setubandha in the south, which is considered the southern limit in Puranic geography. Although Kanyakumari is further south, but Setubandha is taken as the southern point generally in Puranic geography. So this particular land has has been very much influenced by this way of thinking. And in my early days in Bangladesh, which was my first real exposure to Indian culture, although Bangladesh is now politically separated, but really immersion in that culture, although I lived in India for about 2 years before that, but just in a very traditional setting, and they're not at all modernized. So one of the first things I learned was that the culture of tradition that some new ideas for farming, green revolution, may be introduced, and scientists will come and tell the villagers you have to do like this and like that and change your methods, and then someone will say, well, our forefathers never did that, finished. We should just do it the way our forefathers did, and the whole argument is finished. You might have heard that in your childhood, is it? The people say, well, our forefathers did like this. I don't think the modern Indians, they hear this. So there's a very great Purvai Purvataram Kritam. It was done in previous times in this way. And that is enough. Okay. It was done by personalities in the past like this. Okay. That's it. Argument finished. We should also do. You should do as, with the respect for the elders, considering them to be knowledgeable and knowing that the same things have been done in the same way, generation after generation after generation, it should be done. One difficulty that arose with that is that in many cases, people didn't try to understand why. And then when the British came with all their supposedly scientific and analytical way of thinking, then people, they say, well, why? Why do you do that? Why do you smear cow dung on your floor? Cow dung? Okay. You're putting the dung of an animal on your house floor? Why? Well, it says in Shastra, and that's what everyone does. And then, when I first came to India in the 1970s, it was very common people say, oh, it's all just rituals. It has no meaning, because no one knew the meaning. They didn't think that to know the meaning was very important. And they lost the understanding of why it should be done, and just, well, we did it in the past like this. There's a story, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told, actually a very old, variations of this story, of how at a wedding, there was a cat running around and was going to interfere with the, maybe lick up the ghee that was going to be used for the fire sacrifice. So in the middle of all the preparations, the soon-to-be mother-in-law, the mother of the girl who was going to be married, saw the cat is coming. So someone get that cat and do something with it so it doesn't disturb. So they had a basket, one of these baskets that you put chickens in or something like that to stop them running around. So someone stuck a basket on top of the cat, and they were all busy making all the arrangements, so they forgot about the cat. And so throughout the whole wedding, just to the southwest of the yagya, the kund, the place, there was a cat. So 20 years later or whatever, when the woman who was the girl who was being married at that time was overseeing the marriage arrangements of her first daughter. Her mother had already passed away or whatever, and she was trying to remember what to do, and she said, oh, well, one important thing, you have to put a cat in the southwest corner just of the yagya. What? No, well, in my marriage it was like that, you know, it's a tradition. And it becomes a tradition. The cat at the wedding. There are many variations of this story. I just gave a variation of it. So there are problems with that. And so that's why Shastra is the ultimate Praman. The words of great personalities, they may be taken as Praman also. But that has to be understood very, very carefully. Because even things that great personalities say, They may be relevant for certain circumstances and not relevant for all times and all places and all circumstances. That's why Shastra is considered Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastito Gyatva Shastra Vithanav Tam Karyam Kartam Yaharahasi. One should therefore act according to the Tasmat Shastra Pramanuktam. It's very distinct words here. What is stated as Shastra Praman, which differentiates it from Aitihya, from traditional usages. One should know what they are and act according to them in this world. So that does privilege, that this statement of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, does privilege Shastra over ordinary or traditional usages. But it's a vast culture, and there are so many different statements in Shastra which are relevant, may be relevant to different people, and to understand them, and it's a great, to understand this tradition is it requires generally people just follow, but to understand it all requires a very deep scholarship and very deep understanding of Shastra, the intent of Shastra, that will depend upon the different Siddhantas, or those who are Mimamsakas, those who believe that the Vedic processes are meant for elevation to the heavenly planets. They'll follow in many ways the same traditional usages that Mayavadis, Shaivites, Vaishnavas, the same basic thing, rising early in the morning, bathing, and doing some kind of puja or something like this. But their understanding will be quite different, and therefore some of the usages and the things they emphasize will be different. So to understanding the intent, and then the adhikar of the performer, Krishna states in the Uddhava Gita, one acting according to one's adhikar, or one's own particular eligibility, that constitutes punya. So that can be understood, generally this can be understood in terms of one's adhikar according to varna and ashram, particularly varna. So one has to know all these things, to know dharma, the spirit of dharma, to understand culture, traditional usage. It's quite complex. And therefore, mahajano yena gata sapanta, those who are gurus or the guides in Vedic society, they are supposed to be deeply versed in all these things. And now we're giving Brahmin initiation. People are very anxious to have Brahmin initiation, but actually to be a Brahmin is no small thing. One has to be very deeply versed in all these matters so that you can properly guide others. Of course, the essence of being a Brahmin is to surrender to Krishna, but within the Varnashram system, the Brahmanas are meant to give guidance, and Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and even less, they can worship Krishna, which spiritually places one above a Brahmana, but at the same time, everyone has their own particular duties to perform. So it is required that there are persons who are very expert in understanding all these matters. We see that even Arjuna here, despite being very learned in all these matters, and experience in all these matters, he was confused about the proper course of action. And Krishna was able to expertly explain the proper position to him. Now, in this regard, there's, or maybe not in this regard, there is a proposal by one of our esteemed godbrothers who is a Sanskrit scholar, of sorts. I mean, when I say of sorts, I'm not saying that to belittle him, but traditional standards of Sanskrit scholarship are different to those of getting a Sanskrit degree in an American university. So, he's from America, and he has visited India many times, but he's never spent any time in India. And as, for instance, I have, coming from the West and living among the people, visiting holy places, speaking and interacting with traditional scholars and traditional practitioners of Vedic culture, Gauriya and non-Gauriya Vaishnavas and non-Vaishnavas also, who are following all traditions. So his idea is to have a movement within the movement of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which he calls Krishna West. So his idea is that our movement is too Indian, and to make it approachable or accessible to people in the West, we need to make it more attuned with Western culture without changing the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. In other words, chanting Hare Krishna should be there, four regulated principles should be there, and pretty much everything else may be up for reassessment. For instance, dress. His idea is that, well, we can have devotees in Western dress, and Srila Prabhupada also said that you can dress in Western clothes and be a devotee. But Srila Prabhupada said it also helps, this kind of dress. So, and not only the dress, but all the cultural usages that they're helpful. Now, this idea might seem to be good, and it may have some application also. But as a broad principle, we should rather look to the culture that Krishna himself and all the avatars descend in and act with it as being the culture that is best suited for cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Just to give one example, I skimmed through a book that was written by our now passed away godbrother, Indra Prabhu, in which he was visualizing or imagining or whatever Leela in Vrindavan, in which, so I just noticed there, among the cowherd boys, he was using the word buddy, which is a very American way of calling out to a friend. It's a term between male friends. Just like in North India, you may say bhaiya, something like that. It's not exactly the same because the culture is different. And that's the point, that the word buddy has implicit American overtone. It's not even used in England. It's very American. And with that goes the whole concept of friendship and masculinity in America, which is very different to the cultural overtones that go within India. Even to say bhaiya in Hindi, it's not the same as in Bengali, where you might say dada, which would mean elder brother. You'd refer to someone his elder brother, and it's at least that's more. What do you think? You also know both the calling someone bhaiya. It's a different feeling, isn't it? To in Bengali, respectfully calling mixture of affection, and it's more gross, isn't it? Hmm?
Like
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of low class, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, low class kind of thing. So there are problems with that. Just like dressing in pants and shirt. Okay, you can do it in Chan Hare Krishna. But that does identify subtly or psychologically with a whole pattern of behavior and culture and outlook on life. Apart from the fact that those clothes which people buy in America are mostly made by Bangladeshis and Filipinos and whatnot in sweatshops in which they're paid very little to people are paid very little, so it's America and Western countries are able to enjoy opulence at the expense of poor people in other countries. So that's one factor. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to live simply on farm communities and produce our own cloth, very simple cloth like this. That's another factor, that's sattvic. Whereas cloth produced in exploitation of others is not sattvic. That's demoniac, practically. People don't think, how can wearing a pair of jeans be demoniac? But it has those, it has demoniac connections, actually. So there's a whole consciousness that goes with it. Krishna himself, well, it's sometimes argued that we don't find the word dhoti in Bhagavatam and all, although purvai purvataram kritam, the previous artists have always, within India, have shown him dressed in a certain kind of way. Although it could be argued that also sometimes it's seen that especially in paintings that after the Mughals started dominating India, then we see Krishna dressed in salwar kameez. Although even prior to the salwar kameez, for the benefit of, I think you all know, but others who may listen to this from the West, man, and that's like a trouser. So, I mean, salwa means like something like trousers or pajamas, and kameez means a bodice or a overshirt, something like that. But even prior to the Muslim invasions, as I learned from this book, Greek loo in Telugu and Chinese, they noted that in some parts, especially northern parts, so the very cold parts of India, people wore trousers. So although unsewn cloth is generally considered pure, but in very cold parts, maybe they're wearing trousers, something like that. So it may be not outside Indian culture, although it's not considered very high class. So there's just some general observations about that. I've spoken about this many times, that Western culture is developed on a template of ignorance. I spoke about this in the last couple of days. The ignorance of the very nature of being means astitva in Sanskrit, maybe in Telugu also. The very nature of being and of the Atma and of reincarnation. They don't know this most basic thing. So it's based on ignorance. It's based on modern Western culture especially is based on gross sense gratification. So the usages and the whole attitude and the whole way of life is antithetical to Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to re-establish Varnashram society. Now, one perceived problem in the West is that our movement has become an Indian movement. Most of the temples in America are run and frequented by Indian immigrants, which we're not, no one's against Indian immigrants, I hope. But it tends to become so Indian that the idea is that Westerners might feel culturally uncomfortable there and think, well, this is something completely Indian. And there are problems also in not separating the essence of Vedic culture from modern or degraded Indian culture, such that something very horrible came out recently on the internet, that at a Rathiatra, at the festival organized at a Rathiatra organized by ISKCON in Melbourne in Australia, on the stage show they had Bollywood dancing, which is extremely low class and absolutely nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. And we hear also that at some Rathiatra festival in Florida recently, there was a rap dancer. I'm not very familiar with what rap music is, because it became popular in the West after I more or less moved out of the West. And in this year, I spent more time in England. It was about a month probably total than I'd spent since I left there in 1977. And my experience was that I'm not familiar with this country. In one generation, it's changed so much. So rap music, I have some vague idea what it is, but and it's very low class. And there was some rap performer at one Rathiatra festival in Florida, and the lyrics were given, and they were at best vaguely Krishna conscious, nothing to do with Krishna consciousness at all. So this idea that we can run Krishna consciousness on a template of Western culture, that's dangerous. And it's also dangerous to say that we should run on Indian culture, considering what Indian culture is today, but we should rather look at the real spiritual culture, and that requires a lot of research, actually. Although some things, at least Indians, they can usually or often appreciate that. Often, Indians who take to Krishna consciousness within India or outside, they themselves, without even being told, then they start to like to wear, I'm talking about men here, they start to like to wear a dhoti, and the women might start to wear a sari, which is many women growing up in cities in India also don't know how to wear a sari. So they may automatically want to do that because they may not go through a reasoning process within their mind, but they feel it's more appropriate to do so. And actually it is, because purvaya purvataram kritam, that is the dress associated with the practice of Krishna. Traditionally associated with the practice of Krishna consciousness. I have seen once in Goa and in Dwaraka, pujaris wearing pants and shirt. And I said to both of them, hey, what the hell are you doing? In the pujari in Dwarka, he replied to me that, not in the Dwarkadish temple, it was in the Samudra Narayan temple. Yeah. And he said, "Hey, kakarom me ek admi hu. What should I do? I'm just one person, and I have to run this temple." Which I didn't see why he couldn't. It didn't seem to be a very good argument for not wearing a dhoti. But that's creeping in, maybe also. Now it may be said that, well, you know, Kamsa and Jarasandha, they probably dressed in the same way, so the dress itself is not spiritual. Yeah, they followed the same culture in many ways, but they were demons. So it's true that the dress itself doesn't make you a devotee. But it's also true that Krishna appears in a certain kind of culture, and that is favorable for the practice of Krishna consciousness. Now, if we take the anthropological or evolutionary point of view, that cultures, they evolved, that man was evolved from some ape-like creatures, and then there was Stone Age man, and then they gradually became more sophisticated. Then we may think that, well, it's just another culture, but rather we understand that Krishna, he or his yogamaya potency arranges the culture which is suitable for Krishna to appear in. And these cultural usages, they're going on practically eternally. We see the culture in the time of Lord Ram, and this is many millions of years ago. It's not, when we say Ram appeared in Treta Yuga, it doesn't mean two yugas ago. It means way, way back, many Treta Yugas previously he appeared. And it's the same culture, because that is the culture which is suitable for practicing Krishna consciousness. And that is endorsed in various dharma shastras. The dharma shastras are law books which are given by persons with insight into all these cultural usages. What is favorable for pursuing one's goals within Vedic culture. And again, we have to be careful, because many of the usages are similar both for devotees and non-devotees, but then many of the smritis or the dharma shastras, they're made for people who are not interested in moksha or bhakti. They're made for people who are interested in dharma, artha and kama. So we are enjoined to be not to follow smarter usages. Some usages are suitable for smartas. So we may think, okay, well, what usages are suitable for Americans? And well, none. in American culture, there's nothing which is suitable for Krishna consciousness, or if there is, it's coincidental. But I can't think of any offhand. Because the whole culture is based on ignorance and pride in one's ignorance. We have developed so much science and technology. Pride. This has got to be the highest foolishness possible. To be proud of one's foolishness. And usually pride and foolishness go together, because pride itself is foolishness. And vidyadadati vinayam, one who's actually learned, he becomes humble, actually humble. So it's not a matter of of some kind of Indian nationalism. Yeah, yeah, India, yeah, it's better. Everything Indian better. And then you end up with your Bollywood dance. It's not like that. And one, even though birth in India in general may be considered to be superior culturally, but it's really not a matter of pride, that it, because it's all within the material world. It's just, you see, I'm in a cell in the prison which has more comfortable beds than in your cell. So I'm in a better position. We're all prisoners in this material world. And another thing is that Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manusha Jama Janma Shato Kori, one still has to make one's life perfect. It's not, being born in India doesn't mean that one's automatically perfect. I'd heard it said that Srila Prabhupada had said, this is something I heard, many, we often used to hear this, that Indians are very close to Krishna and Westerners are very far away, but the Indians are going away and the Westerners are coming toward. Although when we say the Westerners, it's a small number. So we should be very careful about this, because the rules and regulations given in Shastra, which we might say is Indian culture, well, if we say we want to do things a Western way, then you require an acharya for this, to say what is correct and what is not correct. But that's not Western culture. Modern Western culture is you don't accept any authority and you just do whatever you like. So it's very difficult to put Western culture together with Krishna consciousness. And then you have to choose. You say, okay, we'll accept some things from Vedic culture. Okay, rising early. But then what are you going to choose and what are you going to reject? That's there also in following Indian culture. But in general, we can say that many of the usages which Srila Prabhupada passed on to us, the traditional usages, that he passed them on to us, means that he thought they were suitable for the Western world. He was preaching mostly in the Western world, and he did want to revive Varnashram for the purification of the whole of human society. He did speak of cultural conquest. So culturally, we should be moving carefully, cautiously, not fanatically and not blindly, but toward the kind of culture that was previously practiced and still to a large extent is practiced and still to a large extent affects the psyche of people in India, the old culture. And even though it's young men, they're modern and they're modern educated, but still they have some kind of some basic cultural understanding. Just like you, a few years ago, I was on a train in. We just got on a train in one station in Gujarat, and there was no place to sit. And there was one young man in a suit going to work or whatever, and he was the youngest man in that area, and one of my disciples there said, could you please give a seat for Swamiji if it's just out of culture, maryada, he said. And then he got up and gave me a seat, because it was, the point was brought up that this out of maryada, you could say out of respect or etiquette, so it's still very strongly there. To respect elders, because that of course was there in Western culture also at one point. It wasn't that in Western culture it's all been a total disaster, only a disaster, but even I'm saying that Christianity and all this is based on, the whole Western culture is based on ignorance, but still some things were there, although not now. Respect for elders is, or respect for anyone is it may be there, but on very stupid grounds. Like if someone's good at playing football, they're highly respected. The most respected people in England, not in America, because football is not the main sport there, but the most respected people are the football players. So that's ridiculous. And in India, the movie stars also, and in America also, they have an elevated status. They're considered very special people, but they're just very low class. Their profession is extremely low class. So there is definitely a case for culturally acclimatizing people, and we want to bring Westerners into Krishna consciousness in the West. Although it's not that everyone's completely turned off by Indians and hates Indians, because Westerners do also come. Definitely don't want to give an impression that this is just some kind of Indian movement, and we do want to stress that Krishna consciousness is a transcendental science. But the way Srila Prabhupada presented it, please close that door. Yeah. The way that Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness in the West is distinctly what people would identify as Indian. And it's very difficult not to have that if you have, for instance, puja, arati, prasadam, deities. It all looks very Hinduish. to an outside observer, it looks like something Hindu. We have to explain that the science of Krishna consciousness is not Hindu, but from an external point of view, it is culturally Indian Hindu, and that's unavoidable, because you can't take deities and prasadam and kirtan and all these things out, which all appear to be culturally Indian. If you take all the, then what's left? Then you have something like the Theosophical Society in America presented just the philosophy of Vedanta as they misunderstood it, or the Vedanta Society, Ram Krishna Mission, all this. They presented the philosophy of India as they misunderstood it and left out all the cultural trappings. And where are they? They're nowhere, because they don't. Their spiritual life is all in their mind, but there are activities. In Krishna consciousness means activities. It's not just, it's a philosophy which is applied. That's called science. So one can be Krishna conscious in a suit and tie, but are we going to have people in suits and ties offering arati? I don't think so. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't ever suggest or think that there could be such a thing. Well, the very first temple where there was deity worship done by Srila Prabhupada's disciples, San Francisco, 1968, I believe it was, the deities were Jagannath, Subhadra, Baladev, who had been carved by a local Western devotee under Srila Prabhupada's, carved and painted under Srila Prabhupada's direction. And the arati there was no dressing, no puja, and the arati consists of all devotees would bring a plate with a lamp, and one by one, in whichever clothes they were in, they would offer. But that doesn't mean that that should be the standard forever. That was a very minimized beginning. Afterwards, Srila Prabhupada introduced standards, and he never suggested that, although he did say you can be Krishna conscious in a coat and tie, in suit and tie, but he never suggested that there should be there for arati. And the standard when Srila Prabhupada was present was that when we went to see Srila Prabhupada, devotees wouldn't wear Western clothes. They'd be nicely, nice tilak and in their what you might call ethnic Indian dress. So in some ways, yes, this is Indian culture, and Srila Prabhupada would use that term, but we have to understand its application very carefully, that this culture is in many ways, although there are many regional variations and variations within castes, which is actually a term, it's an English term, there's no equivalent for that term in, the concept of caste is not there in Indian languages, actually. Anyway, that's another discussion. So although there are many variations, it's the same basic culture as we see from Ramayana for literally millions of years. So if it works, and that, well, why change it? That's the culture that Krishna appears in, that Ram appears in, that Vamana appears in. So we should try to come. How far should we come to that? How close should we go? That will have to be seen. For instance, sewn cloth with kurtas, t-shirts like this. I mean, this most t-shirts nowadays have some stupid writing on it. It's just a plain t-shirt. Okay, traditionally, Vaishnavas didn't wear that. Should we get back to unsewn cloth? Maybe we should. That was a short time ago in India. That was considered the proper style. Definitely for anyone doing puja, it must be unsewn cloth. Then again, you see Srila Prabhupada himself, although he quoted within one purport that one should never wear sewn cloth to offer arati, he himself did. So all these things have to be considered very carefully. It's not just a matter of making some declaration. Definitely the old culture, the Indian culture, the traditional culture, that has always been considered favorable for spiritual life, which is why, as I say, people taking to Krishna consciousness, Indians, they'll start to wear dhotis, or people who take initiative. I was told once someone, their uncle and aunt or someone had become disciples of Asaram Bapa. This was maybe 7 or 8 years ago, before his disgrace. And just the fact that they'd been initiated, they'd become vegetarians, they started doing puja every day because they feel, oh, now I'm becoming more spiritual or whatever. But it's very difficult for people growing up in or raised and living in the West to understand this. Because the whole outlook on life is so different. And not the whole outlook on life is actually not very conducive for spiritual life. The individualism to show yourself better than others, which is actually demoniac. Of course, you could say that the following in Indian culture, people can easily be exploited, as in the case of Asaram Bapa. It does require intelligent application, but the basic point is there that that there is a strong tradition and cultural aspects, and we should be very careful before embarking on a wholesale modification of at least what Srila Prabhupada gave us. As Jashavanti Nandan Prabhu said recently, he made this point that Srila Prabhupada did make certain concessions, but let's not go on and on making concessions. Rather, as I said, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke so much about Varnashram, which suggests that he wanted us to move closer to the traditional culture. That he made concessions doesn't mean that we forever have to maintain them. Even the 16 realms, devotees who, for instance, who are older, they're retired, chant more rounds. If you don't have much other activity, chant, go for 64 rounds. Why not? Or on these farm communities, if people can live a more relaxed life and not work so hard, although maybe for one or two, maybe for the first 10 years at least of setting up a farm community, maybe a lot of hard work. But why not? If the time is there, which Srila Prabhupada said, that living simply we should save time, we could go for that, 64 rounds. I don't think the main reason that we don't chant 64, one major reason that we don't chant 64 is not only that we're busy with other things, but we're just not spiritually advanced enough. We don't have enough in sattva gun just to sit down and chant. I'm just offering this as an example of how, if we do actually develop these communities and come to sattva gun, then all these things will seem natural. That we won't want, for instance, we won't want to use plastic or electricity or aluminium. We'll want to live simply and naturally. And then all these usages will come with that. The kind of appreciation of all these usages comes with some subtle purification of consciousness, actually. So these are just some thoughts about this. While appreciating the spirit and understanding that there always has been within Srila Prabhupada's mission some adaptability, but to take it as a wholesale policy, I think we're moving into very dangerous ground there. And where do you draw the line? Television is very much part of Western culture. So and egalitarianism is very much, then how do you have four varnas? Then Western education, if you think, well, it's all okay, but no, Western education is just a disaster. So there are some thoughts. Better as far as possible, move away. Even just like you say, these T-shirts and this and that, that's mass-produced in a factory. It's so much more sattvic to... It's all right, we're not going to send you for health wearing a T-shirt. I just saw it that it's an example. I'm not criticizing you for that. It's mass-produced in a factory. And then once you get the feeling for that we produce our own cloth, and you won't want, there's a certain feeling and satisfaction that we grew, by Krishna's grace, we grew the cotton, we harvested it, we made the cloth, we offered the cloth to Krishna, and this is all part of our mission. And then you just don't feel like buying something from a factory, which is just factory produced, which has got all the ramifications of the money culture and the exploitation and rajoguna. The cotton's grown with BT crops and it's all commercial, and people are making it, they drive it in with some oil and drive it from one place to another and process it with a machine, and it's all from beginning to end, it's just done with the, even though it's cotton, you may get a cotton T-shirt, but it's all from beginning to end. The whole idea is just money. Whereas if you grow yourself and offer to Krishna, it's a completely different consciousness. So these are very subtle things. And in modern Western culture, people have no appreciation of these subtle things. It's very gross. Where in culture, in the mode of goodness, there is appreciation of so many subtle things. Why you don't want to take food cooked by non-devotees. And you'll come to a point where you don't want to take food even that's even bought from non-devotees. You want to take only that which is good. It's such a difference when you grow it, yourself offer it to Krishna. Such a difference. We haven't even begun to understand how beneficial these farm communities, simple living and high thinking is. We haven't even begun to understand how beneficial in all respects it will be for human society and for advancement in Krishna consciousness. And maybe that's one reason why we're having difficulty establishing them, because we don't understand the principles. Okay, there are some thoughts on that. There could be so many questions and objections. And I'm sure this Krishna West kind of thing will go on, because all kinds of things will go on. All these kind of attitudes go on. That doesn't mean that because it goes on, it's recommendable. It produces some. I suspect it's going to produce this kind of. Oh, we don't care for all these rules. We don't care for this rule. Chanting Hare Krishna is the only thing that's important. We don't care for any other rules. And then that attitude is itself offensive to Shastra. And the rules are there to help us. If we don't follow, then we follow our minds. What I should do, what I should not do, then we simply follow our minds. I am for moving more toward traditional, what you might call Indian models, but particularly Vaishnav models within the broader Vedic culture. It's not that all these usages are just for India. Therefore, liberated Vaishnavas since time immemorial, like all the inhabitants of Ayodhya during the reign of Lord Rama. They're all liberated Vaishnavas, and they had a certain culture that we followed. And if we follow that culture, that will help us to develop the kind of consciousness that they had. So we may not understand. For instance, why should we give things and receive items with our right hand? We may not understand, but anyway, that's the culture. Purvaya purvataram kritam. That's what everyone, shishtacharis, that term is there, shishtachar. The behavior of cultured people, that's what they've done since time immemorial. Shishtachar, aitihya, tradition, they're practically interchangeable terms. Although aitihya can also refer to traditional understanding, whereas shishtachar is also that's specifically behavior. This is a very important term, shishtachar. Have you all heard that term before, shishtachar? But it's not much part of our ISKCON vocabulary, is it? It should become shishtachar, proper behavior. And shishtachar means proper behavior, and it means the behavior of shishta, the persons who are shishta. Sadacha, that's another common term which we also don't hear much in ISKCON. They're similar terms, similar, very close terms. Sadachar, proper behavior. And that means specifically following certain rules like rising early, taking 3 baths a day, that's considered to be very proper. Again, people who take up spiritual practice in India, it's difficult in the modern age with people going to work and everything, but 3 baths a day. I know one of my disciples who's from a South Indian Brahmin background, after I gave him Brahminical initiation and he started chanting Gayatri Mantra 3 times a day, he tries to take bath 3. Even when he's at work, he tries to take bath at midday before he does his Gayatri Mantra. Because that's the standard, that we chant Gayatri 3 times a day, but it's not traditionally, it's not just Gayatri chanting, but there's a whole Sandhya Vandanam in which bathing is essential part of the process. And also bathing, there are also rituals to be formed, mantras to be chanted, it's a whole ritual. So you may think, well, that's not important. But traditionally, no one said it's not important, they said it is important. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, yeah.
These cultural descriptions which you find in Bhagavatam of Dwarka and then in Mahabharata of different places and then in Ramayana. So, they generally of India, places in India, within these boundaries.
Cultural descriptions within Shastra, Puranas, and so on, they take place mostly in India, yeah. Mostly within India, there are also descriptions of the heavenly planets and of the spiritual world, where it's the same. Was Vedic culture practiced in other parts of the world? Yes, and there seems to be even what we might call archaeological evidence and literary evidence of that also. But still, this land is particularly important, as described in Shastra. We'll find in the Bhagavatam, for instance, the description of the importance of the land where these rivers flow, and they're all rivers in modern India and Pakistan. And some of them flow into Bangladesh also. Some of them originate in Nepal, but this whole area is particularly important. Although the Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada maintains, and there is good evidence of that also, the Vedic culture was worldwide. So when we say Indian culture, well, Srila Prabhupada said that Bharat, this term, used to refer to the whole planet. It's gradually shrunk. India, up until a short time ago, included the land that's now called as Pakistan. And it wasn't a political, it wasn't politically unified, but it was all considered Bharata. And before that, it would be what is Afghanistan. I know there are so many stans, Kyrgyzstan, Tatarstan. Tatarstan is up in Europe. It's Dagestan, these are all parts of the Russian Union, Dagestan, Tatarstan. Then former USA, Kyrgyzstan, Tatarstan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Stan, they're all. It seems that these lands, they became largely Buddhist. Afghanistan was largely Buddhist. And then they were overcome by Islam. And in this way, they were lost to the Vedic culture. To be reconverted or restored to Vedic culture. Not an easy job, but can be done. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
So, did he say that Krishna will appear again as a Kalki and we know something?
Krishna will come as Kalki in 427,000 years, something like that.
And we sometimes see that we photo that he's riding a horse.
Yeah, he rides on a horse. That's described in Shastra, that Kalki will come riding on a horse. Wearing a dhoti.
Will this culture again take an importance later when...
This culture is eternal. Kalki will appear on a horse with wearing a dhoti. This culture is eternal. Ram appeared, he had this culture. Krishna appeared. So, and Ram, they all come in one day of Brahma. So this culture is eternal. It's the culture of the spiritual world reflected in the material world. It's an eternal culture. That's our understanding. We don't accept anthropological descriptions based on Darwinian evolutionary theory. It's an eternal culture. Whereas Western culture, if you say follow Western culture, it's always changing. You may say that Indian culture is also changing. Well, that's particularly in the modern age under the influence of Kali Yuga.
Ah, yeah. Someone asked you for punctuality.
Punctuality, not very punctual. Yeah.
You told that Srila Prabhupada took the best from
the West. Srila Prabhupada took the best from the West. Well, punctuality is very much part of modern Western life, having watches and trains. To make the whole modern life work, you have to have, for instance, trains that run on time, appointments that are held on time, especially if you have, for instance, an internet Skype meeting from different parts of the world. So such punctuality is required in modern life. It's not required in traditional life. The Mangal Aarti should be, well, it depends which sampradaya, which temple you're in, but we have it before dawn, so. But traditionally it wouldn't be exactly to the second, although Srila Prabhupada kept it like that. That's not to the second, but to the minute. He wanted it punctual. So that's part of modern life. It may not be necessary in future, although rising early, that's for everyone. It's not that not having exact punctuality means you just sleep as long as you like. But rising early must be there. If it's too cold, we can't wear dhotis. Well, we always used to when we joined the movement. Srila Prabhupada had he himself wore traditional Indian clothes. Sometimes he wore a coat also, which there are descriptions of such things in the Sanskrit language. There is a word which I'm just now not remembering, which can be understood as coat. I don't remember it just now. Otherwise, people would wear shawls, which is the word shawl, it comes from a Persian word. It's also there in Bengali. There's the word chada also. That's also not a Sanskrit word. I have to see what the Sanskrit word is for that. Shawl is an English word, and it's also there in Bengali. But it comes from Persian. That's, in general, simplicity is. And that is a very good quality in spiritual life. Maybe Kshatriyas, they won't be so simple. They'll have more decorated clothing. Although in South India most of the year you don't want to wear a lot of clothing. Well, just as I say, in South India, you don't wear a lot of clothing. It used to be that in South India, women of certain castes would go bare-chested all the time. It's hot. That's not common nowadays. Although I used to see in Bengal, it was quite common that widows, they would never wear any sewn cloth. So that in South India also. But there's a way of wearing unsewn cloth in a way that you completely cover the body also. I've also seen it's quite common in North India at least, that old widow, you know, like 70 years or above, they'll go and bathe in the river and they don't bother to cover their breasts or anything. There are many considerations. I don't think we want to introduce that very soon. May not be so very good for our spiritual life.
When you saw Western cultures and Western culture and in recent times, what is the Western culture? It was like that, I mean, all the time, because we also see traditional society and West also, and practices in traditional society also very much based on simplicity.
Well, yeah, traditional cultures all over the world had many similar values. For instance, fidelity in marriage, that one should look after one's children. Although, yeah, in Victorian England, often it seems that children were treated quite harshly. Children were made to work in factories, and the children of royalty, which means the future royalty, the parents would never look after them, because what do they want to look after children for? They're kings and queens. They don't look after children. They're their own children. They hire someone to do that. So, but generally, looking after your children, family values, we could say. Something that's very Western is monogamy. Just that you have one man marries one woman and that's it, finished. Which was adopted into Christianity by someone sometime decided that. But it's not part of Vedic culture. It's not part of course, Ram is famous as being Ek Patni Vrata, but it's common to have more than one wife simultaneously. I mean, in the West, they have more than one wife, one at a time, serial monogamy. This week's wife. But in Vedic culture, in Islam, to have more than one wife is acceptable. Okay, let's leave it there. Hare Krishna. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.